Welcome to the Michael Rivero What Really Happened radio program.
And aloha, America. Welcome to our show today. It's Monday, the start of another week. And obviously, if you are an investor in the stock market, today's got to be looking, at least initially, very, very good. The Dow Industrial Averages exploded upward, almost 500 points in a single day, about a 7% increase. And the media is saying, this is it. This is the turnaround. They're getting the pom-poms out and saying, go economy. I don't think so. And the reason I don't is very simple, and I've said this before. The way the Dow has been reacting to the economic news coming out of Washington, D.C., it is less an indicator of the overall health of America's economy than it is sort of like this gas gauge or a flow meter that is measuring taxpayer money being sucked out of your pocket and sent to Wall Street. Because what was the news that triggered this huge surge today? Was it an increase in manufacturing? No. Was it an increase in retail sales? No. It was the Barack Obama and Geithner plan to finally, months and months after we were told they were going to do it, they're finally going to deal with the toxic assets. Now, how are they dealing with this? Well, Geithner is pushing a plan in which they are encouraging private banks to assume some of the risk. Now, we all know bankers. They're not going to assume any risk. What Geithner's plan is calling for is that private investors, mostly the banks, are going to be encouraged by low-cost government loans and certain other government guarantees to purchase these toxic assets. And then they will turn around and auction them off to try and maximize the return on these assets. Now, folks, if there was money to be made on these assets, we wouldn't be in this problem. What we have here are assets that were overvalued when they were used as collateral, shades of the 1980s SNL disaster. They were hideously overvalued. They're on the books for their full whatever appraisal or collateral value was assigned to them. They're not really worth it anymore. So for these banks and private investors to go along with Geithner's plan to buy these assets and take them off the books of the lending companies and then turn around and auction them, the only way that really makes sense and could even begin to be attractive to these private investors and banks is if the U.S. government is guaranteeing to make up for any shortfall, any serious loss of value between what these assets are bought for and what they are then in turn auctioned off for. Now, the reality is that there may be very few buyers for these toxic assets because of the current economic decline and the decline in the real estate market for those assets that consist of real estate mortgages and so forth and so on. So what we're looking at here is yet another U.S. taxpayer-paid-for gift to the banks in order to make it look like the problems are being taken care of. But they're not really. The bad assets are still out there. They're just getting shuffled around. And they're going to be laundered through the private banks to make it look like this is something that's happening outside of the U.S. government. But then the U.S. government is going to very quietly bail out the banks, to make sure they're not suffering any losses. Now, we're talking about $1 trillion right here. And remember, back in last September, this was the very issue that we were told that original $800 billion bailout, the TARP bailout, was supposed to be covering. That's what it was supposed to do. And then as soon as it was passed, over the objections of 90% of the voters, I might remind everybody, then all of a sudden the money went to direct cash injections, this bank, that bank. Just the money was just flowing all over the place. Now, we're here about, $7, $8, $9 trillion further on. And they're only just now, here at the end of the month of March, actually claiming to start to want to deal with the problem we were told was going to be the source of an imminent collapse last September. So the stock market exploded upward in the anticipation that banks are going to be buying a bunch of toxic assets off of these companies and then auctioning them off and sticking the taxpayers with the losses. That's why the Dow went up as high as it did. Everybody wants to buy into the companies that are going to be dumping their assets. And everybody's just looking forward to the fact that yet more tax money is just going to be dumped on Wall Street to try and fix things. And you go back over the last several months and you take a look at any time the Dow has shot up in a spectacular fashion in a single day, and you will find that there is some form of government action which amounts to looting the taxpayers, borrowing money on their behalf without their permission, and dumping it on Wall Street. So the Dow Industrial Average is not an indicator of how good the economy is doing, because the economy is still in trouble. It's a gas gauge. And all it is doing is measuring the money flowing from your future and your children's future into Wall Street. Now, the other part of the toxic assets, when they say toxic assets, what are they? They're blending them all together. Yes, there's a small component of subprime mortgage-backed securities that have to be cleaned up. But the big problem remains the derivatives. And the derivatives, nobody really knows how bad that problem is. It's estimated by some experts to be over $250 billion, which is more money than the entire planet is worth under our current accounting system. And so this $1 trillion bailout isn't really going to deal with the issue either. But you need to watch out for the code words that our political leadership and our economic leadership are using when they talk about unwinding. They're not talking about cleaning up the mortgages. The subprime mortgage borrowers, they're getting scapegoated for all this. The real demon are the derivatives, the credit default swaps. They are the real exposure and the real cause of the problem. How did we get into this mess? Very, very simply. AIG and the other financial institutions that got into this business were basically selling insurance on these mortgage-backed securities. Some investment group would go out and they'd hand out money for a bunch of mortgages, and the mortgages come back in, and they would bundle them all together, some prime and some subprime, into an investment instrument, which they would then sell to potential investors. And they would tell the potential investors, this is a low-risk investment. And the reason for that is twofold. One, we know the real estate market is always going to be going up. So you got nothing to worry about. Don't worry about it. We're going to take care of it for you. And then the other part of it is that these investment groups would go out to companies like AIG, and they would purchase an insurance policy, a credit default swap, on the investment package of these mortgage-backed securities. So the investment group could then tell their customers, look, we've got insurance on this. If it all comes apart, you're not going to lose anything because we've got insurance that is going to cover this. So what AIG was selling, because AIG and these other companies weren't actually setting aside the cash reserves to pay these insurance policies off, is they were selling the illusion of safety, which the investment groups were buying because it's an outside group and an outside party. Hey, you know, we're not lying to you. We went to this other company. They're telling us that this is a low risk. They've issued the insurance on it. And between the two of them would present this illusion to the investing public that these mortgage-backed securities were inherently safe. And as long as the real estate market was going up, they were. But once that bubble burst, we had that froth up 2 years ago where real estate prices just went right through the roof, and everybody knew it was a bubble. And once it started coming back down, then all of a sudden some of these mortgage-backed securities are going bad. The investors are coming back and saying, well, you know, we've got this insurance policy, you know, that we were told was making this a safe investment. And AIG and these other insurance companies were suddenly in trouble because they owed far more money than they had. And rather than go out of business, they went to the U.S. government and said, can we stick the American people with these losses from these flaky insurance policies we probably shouldn't have been selling in the first place? And that is what is going on right now. And today, the U.S. government has again showered money on Wall Street, and that is the reason the Dow has gone through the roof. We're going to take a break here. Join us on the air, 800-259-9231. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is Cascadia Public Radio.
Welcome to What Really Happened Radio. Visit us online at whatreallyhappened.com. And now, set your eyes on the future and let's consider what really happened.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show here. Just a reminder, Donovan is in the control room today, twiddling the dials and answering the phones, and he's feeling a little lonely. So if you want to grab the phone, call 800-259-9231, 800-259-9231. Call in, let us know what you think is going on with the Dow just exploding up 7% in a single day in the middle of an obvious bear market. And meanwhile, I keep forgetting to turn off that little notification sound. Apologies for that. There's way too many buttons on this system to keep track of during showtime. Now, moving back to the economy real briefly, we're not going to spend the whole show on the economy. We're going to get into some science and health issues here at the end. But obviously, with so many Americans struggling just to put food on the table and having to choose between rent and medicine and gas and fuel and taxes, especially as we head into tax season, a lot of people are very angry about taxes because it seems it doesn't matter how hard you work, the government's throwing you further into debt faster than you can dig your way out. And a lot of people are starting to say, why should we even bother anymore? You know, there's nothing that we can do that is ever going to satisfy this particular ravening wolf of a government. And so a lot of people are really, really just, they said, they've had it. Can't blame them for that. Can't blame them for that one tiny bit. Now, getting back to the economy, China has come out in support of Russia's proposal to allow the International Monetary Fund the power to create a new reserve global currency, whether it'll be anchored on the euro or if it'll be something that is simply created solely within the IMF itself. But the point is, they're walking away from the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And the reason for that is really very simple. Because if you go back to the Bretton Woods conference at the close of World War II, in which the United States dollar was declared the reserve currency for the world to allow world banks to basically come to the U.S. and borrow money when they needed to get through their own economic troubles, it basically established the dollar as worth, you know, so much value. And then over the years, the U.S. began to simply print more and more of the dollars, or the Federal Reserve did, and it basically was in the form of an imperial tax because these countries were having to deal with dollars internationally, and they were having to give them their full face value, and yet the U.S. was simply putting more and more of them out there in a form of legalized counterfeiting, which is really what the Federal Reserve is all about. So we've hit the point where the other countries around the world are realizing that locking their currencies to the U.S. dollar has become a severe liability, and they're starting to de-link and pull away, and they're trying to very slowly get out of the dollar holdings that they have, because nobody wants to dump anything real suddenly, because that'll spark a stampede, and they definitely do not want to do that. But we're now at the situation where China and Russia are saying, you know, we've got to go with something else. And maybe it might be the euro. That has been suggested as the new global reserve currency. Or they might create something completely new out of thin air. But the bottom line is that if the world moves away from the dollar as the global reserve currency, it is going to be a major hammer blow to the value of the dollar. And the dollar will plummet internationally. And that means the price of everything that we import, which is most of it, is going to just skyrocket right through the roof. Absolutely. Anyway, we've got a caller on the line. We're going to go to Jesse in Texas. Aloha, Jesse. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Hey, Mike. I'm calling from a cell. I hope you can hear me okay.
I hear you just fine. What's on your mind?
Right on. I definitely believe that the jump in the stock markets is, you know, market manipulation.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think you're hitting the nail on the head with everything you've been talking about this afternoon. The global currency, You know, who knows what it's going to be, but, you know, one trend that I have also noticed is that anytime a country wants to switch over to a different currency for their oil supply, that's mm-hmm. when we attack those countries. So
notice that, did you?
We will either have to go along with this world currency, or we're going to be at war with the whole world. So, you know, it's just not a good situation from any angle.
Well, look at how many military
bases.
Look how many military bases we have spread across the globe. Over 700 of them. We're already at war with the rest of the world, and the rest
of
the world hates us for it. You know, we're the modern equivalent of the Roman Empire. We're behaving just like it, and we've reached that point where we've lost a key legion, which is what brought the original Roman Empire down. We can't project power effectively around our territories and possessions. And they're starting to flex their muscles, and they're starting to break away. I mean, you saw this thing with Hamid Karzai earlier today, where, you know, the U.S. is going in to install a puppet, bypassing their own puppet, which just tells you how incredibly flaky things are getting there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But thank you so much for what you're doing, and keep up the good work.
Well, thank you very much, and thank you for the call, and please call in again. There obviously we are witness to a tremendous transition in the global power, in political influence, in global economics. We are witnessing the decline of the United States as a major imperial power. There are many who think maybe that this is overdue. We know that the USSR and the United States were the last of the Cold War superpowers that were still spending huge percentages of their gross domestic product on the weapons of death and destruction. No other industrial country spends anywhere near as much of their gross domestic product on the weapons of war as the USSR did and the United States do. And maybe the path to global peace and global disarmament, at least for the immediate future, is for the number one warmongering nation on Earth to join the USSR in the dustbin of history. Because the reality is, for all the talk about bringing peace and democracy and global leadership, just on the point of the amount of spending that our country does on weapons, the United States is the most warmongering nation on Earth. It is so tied into our economy, as Eisenhower tried to tell us. Our economy requires overtaxing the people and spending it on weapons, basically to keep the status quo preserved. It's that tightly bound up. And we've even reached the point, there was another article, we put it up today on whatreallyhappened.com, which basically saying the United States has become the largest borrower in the world. And by the way, that all happened during the Reagan and first Bush presidencies. Those 12 years, because of all the borrowing done on the Strategic Defense Initiative, which went nowhere, those 12 years took the United States from being the world's largest creditor nation, where we had money and other people were borrowing it from us. We went in that 12 years to being the world's largest borrower in just that 12 years. And the U.S. national debt is trillions of dollars. Nobody even knows how much because the books are being so cooked. And we're down to the point where this article, which I linked earlier today, says there's only two choices left. The U.S. government has to go out of business and declare default, or it's got to trigger a world war. I think they're aiming at the second one. I personally would prefer the first. We're going to take a break here. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
This is the GCN Radio Network.
We will not go down in the night without a fight. You can burn up our mosques and our homes and our schools, but our spirit will never die. We will not go down in Gaza tonight.
And aloha, America. Welcome back to the show. We're getting a lot of response to the first part of the show here, and there's a strong consensus that no, the almost $500 rise in the Dow is not necessarily automatically a good thing. We've got email here in response to the China's support for Russia's proposal for a new international reserve currency. while we've all seen how it's done, but the why has been kept hidden until just recently. The banking debt disaster and the Bush-Obama recovery plan so far have only made sense if destruction and debasement of the global system of finance was the intention all along. We have had problem reaction so far, and now here comes the inevitable offer of a solution. Turn the IMF into a global kingmaker from which all power over nations will flow. I knew this was coming eventually because I knew it was the only desirable for some outcome. Wonder if the forthcoming IMF superbank will be headquartered in Jerusalem. Sorry, but I think I'm having a Mark of the Beast moment here. What could be worse than American something... Jebus Fundy's shouting, I told you so. I'm not sure exactly what the last part means there. Now, this idea that the destruction of the economy is intentional to bring on a world bank, I'm not sure I would go with that. We know that people who want certain agendas are always preparing to implement those agendas when circumstances present themselves. And I think it's very obvious that the U.S. economy was headed in a very, very dangerous direction. That's been obvious for many, many years. I posted some articles at whatreallyhappened.com, one in particular, must be almost 8 years ago, saying our nation is in deep doo-doo. It's been pretty obvious since we started losing our manufacturing that our economy was doomed, because an economy that isn't making products for sales cannot survive. You know, they can play all their little bookkeeping games and move the money around and shake it back and forth and say, ooh, it's growing magically. But at some point, the music stops, and you either have enough chairs or you don't. And that's really what it comes down to. We're going to go to the phones. We've got Todd in Ohio. Aloha, Todd. Welcome to the show. What is on your mind today?
Yeah, hello, Mike. A friend of mine is an Obama supporter. And for many years, he's kind of caught in the whole left-right paradigm. Kind of the same thing if you watch MSNBC, anyone that watches Keith Olbermann, for instance, when the Military Commissions Act was passed. I don't know, did you see that special comment that Keith Olbermann gave?
Yes.
In response?
Yes,
But that was right before the Democrats took control of both houses of Congress. Okay, but these days, you don't hear any mention of the Military Commissions Act, the Patriot Act, Presidential Directive 51, all of these things. There's a documentary called Washington, You're Fired, which all of these different police state expansion measures are covered. And there's all of these people that seem to be under this spell, it seems, that because the Democrats control both branches now, the executive and the legislative, that somehow that's not a concern anymore. And to me, that's very dangerous. And the question I want to ask is, this was the response I got. I'm like, I was explaining to this person all of these bills, the Patriot Act, Military Commissions Act, I could give you a long list, are still in place. You know, none of those things have been repealed. And the response I got was that, well, the Democrats, they don't have a supermajority in the Senate, is the response I got. And so somehow that hampers them or prevents them from repealing this stuff. So,
well,
now, the last
sounds like somebody's trying to make excuses there because, you know, I mean, it just takes a simple majority to repeal a law. And obviously the president has to sign the new bill as well as the old bill. But I think just from this last weekend, watching how Barack Obama and the Congress are hemming and hawing, and already this idea that they were going to tax back the bonus money to AIG, that's already slamming to an absolute halt. So the supermajority thing, that's only valid if you're concerned about a presidential veto.
Well, right. Well, or either that or breaking a filibuster. This is the only two things I know that you need a supermajority for, and that's breaking what you just said, a veto, or to end a filibuster. Other than that, for instance, if there was a repeal the Patriot Act bill that came up for a vote in the Senate, you would only need 51 senators to repeal that particular law.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, that's really a question. That's not a statement. Last I checked, he was making the claim that somehow that was changed in the last 10 years.
No,
Republicans
no, that's...
Knew, The reason I bring this up is because he's constantly watching the mainstream media. So if he's telling this to me, then I'm thinking, well, a lot of other Obama supporters, Democrats, or mainstream Democrats are under the same impression.
Well, it would make sense to me. Let me cut in here for just a second. It would make sense to me because a lot of people who supported Obama are already beginning to fall away. They're beginning to realize they got snookered. That Barack Obama, he presents well. He looks good. He just comes across. He's got charisma, and he speaks considerably better than his predecessor. But he is very much a manufactured front for some of the same private interests who were behind Bush. And I think the issue that where he tried this last week to sell this idea that soldiers should be forced to buy their own health insurance to pay for war-related injuries, I mean, the fact that he actually thought this was going to fly with the public tells me that he is already dangerously out of touch with what's going on here on Main Street America.
Right, right. But anyway, I just thought I wanted to just ask you if you had heard that same excuse, because I was just dumbfounded. Because what they're basically saying is don't blame the Democrats. They only control the White House and both houses of Congress.
Yeah, that's exactly what they're saying. You know, they're trying to keep their core supporters, they're trying to keep the poll numbers up, but the reality is that Barack Obama is not keeping his campaign promises. He is pushing the same agendas we had only 6 months ago with a completely different party in charge. It's the same agenda. They're trying to figure out some way they can convince their supporters, listen, it's not going to happen right now, we can't do it right now, and they're coming up with excuses. You're right. The supermajority only becomes necessary if they're having to override a presidential veto, which in this case they should not. Or there is a filibuster going on, which, you know, might be real. There might be some GOP senators who are saying, we will filibuster any attempt to undo this anti-terror legislation that was the crowning achievement of our past 8 years in control, blah, 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 blah.
And I'm an independent, by the way, for anyone that's listening. I voted for Ralph Nader in, last year. And before that, I was a Libertarian Party candidate supporter. So I've been third party a supporter for many years.
Okay, I've been a Republican most of my life, but it's getting awfully darn difficult.
Yeah, it's all about principles, not partisanship these days.
Well, that's what I seem to have. I'm a paleocon as opposed to a neocon, and that's really what it comes down to. Yeah, it is an issue of standing for principles and the original principles of the conservative movement, which is small, limited government, leave everybody alone, and fiscal responsibility. Those are the original principles. But unfortunately, too much government is sold to the voters by saying, if you vote for me, I'll take money from those people over there and give it to you for whatever you happen to feel is an important thing to do. And,
okay.
You know, and then they come up with things to sell you, like global warming, to try and get your votes and your money.
Oh, don't even get me started. That's another call. I could go on.
That's another whole show. It has been several whole shows. All right, well, listen, thanks an awful lot for the call, Todd, and please call in again because you got lots of really good things to be saying there. Yeah, government basically, if you really think about it, with the United States, we haven't had a major, major war in a long time, you know, since the middle of the last century. And we've had these little police skirmishes and these insertions where we're going in and installing puppet governments, and they're very unpleasant. But government these days has to sell you things that you don't know you need, or they have to convince you you need them, then they'll sell them to you. They have to create the problem, then sell you the solution to get your votes and your money. And it's snake oil. We have a snake oil government. We're going to take a break. We'll be back after these words from our sponsors.
Can we talk?
Can we talk?
Can we talk about gun control?
Gun control?
Seems like it should work, doesn't it?
It should work.
You'd think so. Yeah.
Pass the right laws.
Pass the right laws.
And you can disarm the criminals.
You disarm them.
That's the idea.
But the problem is...
The problem?
Criminals don't obey the law.
They don't obey the law.
That's true.
After all, they're criminals.
They're criminals.
Criminals. They'll always find a way to get guns.
No matter how many laws you pass.
Which means
they still have guns.
They still have guns. While the rest of us...
The rest of us?
The rest of us are just left defenseless.
Americans who own guns, people like you and me, prevent over 1 million violent crimes every year. Get the facts on gun control. Visit armedandsecure.org. That's armedandsecure.org.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Aloha, America. Welcome back to our show again. I was waiting for Mr. Announcer to say something there, and he didn't, but I'm back here. We're going to catch up on some science and technology stories here. Obviously, Mount Redoubt in Alaska is having a, it's getting its rocks off is what's going on. It's had five eruptions overnight, a lot of fine ash dropping around the whole area. It's really quite spectacular. My wife and I, before we moved to Hawaii, we were living in Washington State. We could walk out our door and see Mount Rainier and further in the distance Mount St. Helens just as part of our view. It was a very lovely place. We lived in up the Cascade Mountains. And obviously we spent a lot of time up on the top of Mount Rainier and also down at Mount St. Helens. This term ash is misleading, and if you are listening to my show from the portion of Alaska that is being rained on by this ash, it's actually very fine glass particles. You do not want it in your lungs or sinuses. You cannot be too careful with this kind of stuff. Also, if it starts accumulating on your roof, you need to get it off there. Because it's not like snow, which is light and fluffy water. This is glass. And when volcanic ash accumulates on roofs, the weight can reach the point where the roof will simply collapse. And so I don't know how bad it is up there. I do remember how bad it got in the aftermath of Mount St. Helens. So you really do need to be very, very careful. They probably ought to call it something other than ash because the word is misleading. It implies a benign quality, which is just not there. It's very, very finely powdered glass, and you need to treat it as such. Okay, moving right along here. Just got an article. I haven't even had time to put it up on whatreallyhappened.com, where First Solar Incorporated, using this cadmium telluride technology for thin-film solar cells, has cracked the $1 per watt price barrier. Now, what that means is that they can manufacture and sell solar cells for $1 per watt, and that's presumably in full sunlight, for the solar cell. So if you needed 100 watts of power, it would cost you $100 to put the solar cells up. This is getting into the area where solar power becomes really attractive as an adjunct for your home power supply, or certainly on top of your campers or cars or whatever. Hopefully there'll be some further breakthroughs. This may basically signal the moving away from silicon-based technologies. It is an interesting field. It definitely can solve a lot of problems as long as you have good solar cells and something to store the surplus electricity, because obviously you need to save the electricity during the day to use at night. It's not much point having a power system that only gives you electric light when the sun is out. But I digress. All right, we're going to go and talk about some of the news coming out of Israel in the last few minutes of today's show. And we're continuing I'm going to change my mind. There's one other science story I really wanted to get into. And it turns out that the government, you know, keeps going back and forth about whether vaccines cause autism or not. And there's an organization called Generation Rescue. And this is run by a lot of people. But two of the figureheads are Jenny McCarthy and the actor Jim Carrey. And we've talked about Jim on this show many times before in relation to his movie The Majestic, which is a wonderful movie, out of character of his normal comedy roles, but definitely worth seeing, especially in these troubled political times. But they've gotten involved with this organization that is basically trying to bring public information to bear about autism. And the U.S. government has at times officially declared that there is no link between vaccinations and autism. There is no link between the mercury-based preservative thimerosal and autism, even though our children here in the United States are the most vaccinated children in the entire world, and coincidentally, we have the highest per capita rates of autism. And this website, GenerationRescue.org, really lays out a lot of this information. But basically, there's been yet another ruling from the so-called vaccine court that concluded that, yes, indeed, at least one case of autism was caused by the vaccines involved with the patient. Now, what really makes this kind of frustrating for the people who are trying to deal with the situation is the same bill that created the Department of Homeland Security, when this whole terrorism thing was rocking and rolling, a rider was attached to this bill, which basically indemnified vaccine manufacturers from lawsuits from anybody who felt they were harmed by the vaccine products. And it was justified because, in theory, the vaccination companies, the vaccine manufacturers, were our first line of defense against a biological terror attack. And this was the reason why they needed to be protected from lawsuits from people who felt they were being harmed. Now, this was put through at a time when the evidence was really first beginning to surface that linked the incidence of autism in children with the mercury-based preservative thimerosal. And for a while, there was a ban saying no more thimerosal could be allowed. Then they backed off and said, well, you can use up whatever you've got left in your stocks. And it sort of went back and forth and back and forth. And then a year ago, the U.S. government, the FDA, came out and said there is no link between thimerosal and vaccine and autism. We declare it so. And now, again, it's swinging back the other way. And this is an issue because we do have a lot of autistic children in this country. And if indeed there is a link between, you know, all of these vaccines that go into the body. And here's where it gets really reckless. They'll test the individual vaccines on petri dishes full of the disease organism or the lymphocytes that are supposed to be stimulated to produce the antibodies for that disease. But the testing of the chemicals that are mixed with the vaccine to make it deliverable or to preserve it so it can sit on the shelf for a long period of time before the doctor uses it, those don't get the testing. And the one thing they don't test at all is when they take five or six vaccines and put them in the same syringe together and inject them into the child all at the same time. How they're interacting with each other, that has not been tested at all. At all. So this issue continues to go back and forth. And we know already listen to those disclaimers on the pharmaceutical commercials that you see on TV. They are selling stuff to us that is not necessarily very good for anybody. Our corporate culture gladly sells products that may harm us in that quest for profitability. We have seen it time and time again, whether it's monosodium glutamate in the food, aspartame, classic example, synthetic bovine growth hormone, genetically modified seeds, all kinds of additives. I noticed the other day, I just thought it was so funny because there's been such negative press about high fructose corn syrup. It was originally touted as this wonderful alternative to sugar. Well, now it's come out that high fructose corn syrup is actually worse for you than regular traditional cane or beet sugar. And now the corn syrup industry is running what are called corporate image ads. High fructose corn syrup it's fine for you in moderation. And I love the way they said that because, you know, obviously there's some lawsuits and some constraints involved there. So my hat's off to Jim Carrey, who is loaning his name and his support to Generation Rescue. And it is a very, very good cause because, unfortunately, we live in a time where we cannot trust that corporations, medical corporations, are really operating in our best interest, or if in fact they're simply looking at the health of their bottom line. And we, the people, we've got to be our own best protection because it's equally obvious that our government has abandoned any pretext of protecting us from corporate abuse, which is it's supposed to be its traditional role in a republic. In a fascist state, government and corporations team up together against the people. That, according to Benito Mussolini, who we can assume knew fascism when he saw it. So it's one of the benefits of the internet, and it's rather interesting because the Rockefellers have come out and said that the internet is the greatest threat to national security that we face right now. And I think the bottom line is they're concerned that they can't lie to us anymore about vaccines and autism or political lies and corruption or corporate wrongdoing. And the world has changed, and it's not going to go back to the way it was before the days of the internet, no matter how much they try. And on that happy note, we're going to stop here. We'll be back tomorrow, same time, and more news. We'll see what happens to the Dow tomorrow. It may continue to coast upward on the news of the new financial bailout plan. I don't expect it will sustain. I still think there's a new bottom to be found. We'll see. Time will solve that mystery. Until tomorrow, aloha, America.